closer to being ready.
And now Turner straightens it out and hits it a ton to left. And that is gone. His first home run as a Blue Jay, his fourth RBI already here today, and it's 5-1.
Well, the Blue Jays needed a rim producer, and they got one right here in Justin Turner. Three at bats, four ribbies. They're getting closer to being ready.
Ooh, that was so good we did it twice.
How about that?
So I guess that's the definition of run producer that we saw in yesterday's 9-2 win over the Rays, Kevin Barker.
Look, it's better, no offense to everybody else that's not named Justin Turner, it's better to have him up than the other names that they could slot into the four spot just because of the at-bats he has. It's even like the at-bat when he hit the homer. He takes the pitch before that, hits it really far foul that almost went for a homer. Mm-hmm. Most people, because I've been in that position too, strike out the next pitch because they overswing and they try and force it to the big part of the field, right? They're thinking you only get a couple of good swings per at bat. You don't want to waste them. Well, sometimes when you hit a ball that far foul and it almost goes for a homer, mentally you're telling yourself, uh-oh, I got to overcompensate for something else. I got to keep this in the big part of the field. Then you either chase because you're more thinking about that than you are actually see ball, hit ball. So, yeah, for him to be able to do what he did yesterday, that just makes it a little easier for everybody else. I like the free and easy of sort of the process of how he goes about it. It's 80% of his swing. It's when he was on here and I asked him, you watch Vladdy. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give Vladdy? And he said, I try not to swing 100% all the time. And you're seeing sort of that when he has those at-bats that really matter and can help his team win a baseball game. It's just free and easy. And, you know, I keep the shoulder square. I stay inside of the ball. The timing of my front foot gets down so I can make a collision contact out in front of the plate. And whenever he does that to the pull side and can do it in the air, and he's a launch angle guy. You have to have timing to do that and all the parts and everything that goes on before his foot actually hits the ground to actually see it take place and consistently be able to do it at bat over and over and over again is pretty impressive.
So the Jays split the four-game series with the Rays 2-2, and they open a three-game series tonight against the Houston Astros, who were swept by the New York Yankees. We'll be joined by Jeff Blum later on to talk about that. The Jays 9-2 win yesterday coming in the heels of a loss to Tampa, a 5-1 loss, and I believe, and Tampa also beat them 8-2 in the second game of the series. The Jays opened the series with a big win as well. So one of the things about the early part of the season is people tend to overreact to things, right? Because you either a team comes out and continues what they've shown in spring training, or I think in the case of a team like the Blue Jays, which finished the season, shall we say, not in a high last year, and a team that I think most of us have suspicions that this lineup still isn't necessarily good enough. When we saw the Jays, those middle games, that 5-1 game and that 8-2 loss, we thought, okay, here we go again. But that 9-2 win yesterday, just, you know, we talked about reinforced the importance of Justin Turner. I mean, look, there's a lot of good in this series.
Yeah.
I think 2-2 split, I frankly think there was more good than bad. You know, we sat there, we sat down and made a list. Vladdy, on just about every level, showed you what you want to see. Yeah. We talked about, we're even laughing about launch angles up more than it was last year. Early days, but that would suggest that, you know, we want Vladdy to hit home runs.
Yeah.
We want Vladdy to hit home runs. The pitching, Kevin Gausman.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that was like a second spring training start for Kevin Gausman.
Yeah, I think that's
going to be better.
Early in the season, that's sort of the way it looked. Even last year, I think the velocity's a little all over the place. The split finger's not doing what he wants it to do, right? When he's really good, he's got two different split fingers. One he can steal a strike with, one he can eliminate you with. He'll throw enough of the sliders and the fastballs consistently at a certain number until he needs the extra gear, which he doesn't always need. Yeah, you saw the sort of the velocity was a little bit all over the place. But that, look, he did exactly what he was supposed to do. Go out there, mm-hmm. pound the zone. You know, the home run he gave up to Arozarena, that was more sequencing mistake than it was for me anyway.
Two sliders.
Right? Yeah, yeah. You know, I don't think all the time he'll do that. If he's got his really good split finger and the velocity that he thinks he should have, he won't be throwing a Rosarena two sliders in a row to fall behind and then, you know, basically throw a fastball down the middle. He won't be doing that. So other than that, I don't know how you can argue. And boy, that team looks really good when he's on the mound. Like, it just looks like everything's supposed to be where it's supposed to be at. And, you know, they're all systems go and trying to win a baseball game. So that's a good thing for the Blue Jays, especially with what they don't have in the pen, which is, you know, could be a problem, especially now if Cabrera, you lose him for a couple of days. How do you fill in the blanks? So having a good starting pitcher on the mound is never a bad thing.
We'll talk about that in a minute. I thought Ernie Clement showed what we saw in spring training, what we saw at the end of last year. He's a guy you don't mind having in the lineup. Bo Bichette scratched with neck spasms. I really liked, frankly, after four games, I was okay with what he gave me. I was frankly okay with what Isaiah Kiner-Falefa gave me. And Davis Schneider hit a home run. And oh, by the way, 19 walks and 6 home runs over 4 games.
Yeah, I think there's
he'll take that.
I think there's some competition between the Snyders, the Clements, the IKFs of the world. You know, I want to throw Kevin Biggio in there. I think against the righty, he's the everyday, for the most part, second baseman. And if he's doing things, taking pitches, getting his walks, they'll throw him in there, too, against some tough lefties. So I think you can't throw him in the mix, but there is 3 or 4 guys that are competing. They're like, they want to, you know, play well enough to force John's hand and you know, keep themselves in the lineup. Look, Ernie, I think, is sort of learning on the fly when it comes to, you know, at the big league level, how do you attack at bats depending on what the scoreboard tells you and who's standing out in front of you on the bases. Like, early in counts would say a guy on third, say first and third, like a situation, you can't take a fastball down the middle. Like, those are the things he's sort of learning on the fly, because deeper in counts you go, that would mean you're going to get nastier pitches, you know, like a sinker in from a righty or a slider down and away from a righty. Like, you would get pitches a little later in counts that you won't get early in counts. So he's learning on the fly. You like everything else. You like the hustle. I mean, if you're into that, you love the hustle that he gives you all over the field.
I like the defense.
I do too. He's going to catch the balls he should catch.
Yeah.
He'll throw the balls where he's supposed to throw them, and he sort of understands when he doesn't throw one right, self-correct, don't do it again. It's like the ball he threw to Vladdy, right, that made Vladdy stretch. He didn't really like that, and it was, you know, it's my fault. I won't do it again. It's this kind of thing. So I think every good team needs a guy like Ernie Clement on their team.
I get the impression that, again, based on what we saw last year, based on what we saw in spring training and early in this, that there's a comfort level with Ernie Clement for John Schneider, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so. Look, I think he's a good player. Like, you can't, you know, it would be one thing if you're trying to force it. They're not really trying to force it because he's a good player. Mm-hmm. Like, they think they pencil his name in a lineup, you know, wherever they put him on the field defensively, he's going to give them what he's supposed to be giving them, right? You know, make the routine plays. Don't hurt your team. Be smart on the bases. Have that at bat. Whatever inning that at bat is, have that at bat. I think, you know, he's sort of growing into, you know, trying to be whatever he's supposed to be on a really good team, like he is now. And again, you know, the organization's done a good job. That they've made the bench easier for John to sort of fill in the blanks when he's supposed to fill them in. Like, he's got different things over there to be able to give guys days off against certain pitchers and against certain teams. That's, you know, sort of no-brainers. He doesn't have to force it. He doesn't have to overthink it. And that's only going to help not only the player, but the manager and all the coaches to just sort of fill in the blanks and understand when this player will probably play, which will give him a better chance to be the best player they can be.
All right, let's talk about – I'm not going to say the bad, but I guess the more negative – aspect of it. I want you to tell the listeners and the viewers what you told me about the defense. Because the first thing I said to you is, Kevin, 6 errors. Five errors. Have 5 errors. And you said, throwing errors, I don't care about it. You didn't say I don't care about it. You said throwing errors early in the season, and you just kind of shrugged it off.
Yeah,
explain that to me.
First week of the season, a couple of those from Justin Turner. Like, you know, when you put him at third, there's probably reasons why you're putting him over there, right? There's something going on where you're trying to get the best offense on the field. It's easier to put him there and sort of work in the lefty if you want to work in the lefty. And, you know, if you want to give Springer a day off, half a day off, you DH him. Like, there's reasons why he's at third. I just think early in the season, if they're going to make errors, you know, Bo made one of those where he sort of overran the baseball. Maybe he's thinking about turning the double play before the actual play happened. And sometimes you get ahead of yourself when it comes to your body. the ball plays you instead of you playing the ball, and you tend to miss it and don't get it out that way. Other than that, the throws, look, it's early in the season. Sometimes just, you know, everything that's going on around you is not spring training.
Like, yeah, you're not playing spring training parks
it
anymore.
It really is.
Yeah.
It's bigger. No, everything's fair. Quicker. Fair. Guys are running faster. Like, you know, it's their numbers now. Like, they're trying to, you know, get the first and those kind of things. And sometimes that internal clock goes a little faster than it should be going, especially early in the season, and you tend to not be matched up mechanically the way you're supposed to be matched up. And, you know, good defenders, no matter where they're at in the infield or no matter where they're at in the outfield, always follow their throw. They always do that, right? It's Derek Jeter, you ever listen to him talk about when he throws a baseball, follow it. It's almost like when you release it, you're sort of forcing it or guiding it to where you want it to go. Momentum towards your targets, like a pitcher, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to fall off to one side because the ball won't go where he wants it to go, so you sort of follow your throw. And then you see guys this early in the season, for whatever reason, whether it's getting in a hurry or mechanics, just everything that first week that's sort of too fast for them sort of sometimes makes them, you know, do and look sort of the way they look when they throw the baseball and it doesn't go where they want it to go. So, yeah, I wouldn't pay too much attention to that. They're a really good defensive team.
Yeah,
they'll figure it out and they'll make the plays they're supposed to make most of the time.
And the thing we've seen from Bo in the past is when he does make errors, he goes on these runs where he just doesn't make another.
The throwing error for me, Vladdy should have made that play. He should have helped him out at first, and you know, that error there probably should not have been made, but I'm sure Bo won't make excuses and say he should have hit him in the chest.
Six stolen bases given up to the Rays. Probably no surprise. Kevin Cash talked about wanting to, not just against the Blue Jays, but talked about wanting to be really, really aggressive this year in the base path. Are we almost at the point where this is just going to be, like, you've got Gausman, Bassett, Kikuchi. These guys are finished products. They're not going to learn stuff on the fly. I don't want Kevin Gausman slide stepping. Do we just have to accept that the Blue Jays are going to give up a lot of stolen bases?
Now make sure you notice that when they do steal, they pick out off at second more now. Like, they're trying to make up for what they don't do well, holding the runner at first,
right,
and do something a little bit better by maybe catching a base runner at second, not paying attention, pick him off that way. I know that was a big topic in spring training, was make sure you pay attention to the guy at second. Don't be afraid to put on a play. You know, maybe we get a cheap out that way. I just don't know how it gets better. We'll talk to Buck a little later. I know Buck's pretty adamant about, you know, do different things. I'm just not sure the catchers that they have strong enough arms to make up for what the pitcher doesn't do well. Do you want Bassett in a hurry to throw one of the seven pitches? I don't really. Do you want Kevin Gausman slide-stepping with two pitches? I don't really. Do you want Yusei Kikuchi, you know, more worried about throwing strike one and being efficient with strike three than worrying about holding the runner on? That's what I said. There's a fine line there, right? You want the best stuff out of these guys, and for them to actually have to sit and think about it, because some of the times you can see it. Example, Jordan Romano, when he's on the mound, you can actually see him physically thinking about how he holds the runner on at first. Do you really want that? Or do you want him worried about punching that guy out at home plate? So there's where Pete Walker is sort of, and I was yelled at from Petey in spring training, saying that they were really bad. And he's saying the numbers that they're telling them, they weren't. Well, I just know they were like sixth worst in baseball giving up stolen bases last year. Pretty cut and dry for me. Mm-hmm. How do you fix that? I'm just not sure it's fixable with who they have and who's throwing behind the plate. So that's why I think, you know, again, this is something sort of intriguing. If you watch the Jays every day, like Jays fans do and like we do, pay attention to trying to pick off at second base. There'll be a lot of movement between the second baseman, the shortstop, the pitcher, the catcher. Like, pay attention. You know, you do the catcher drops the glove, he flips it to second. Like, there's some things that you can pay attention to that would help them get a cheaper out because they didn't so much do their job to the fullest of holding the guy on at first.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the bullpen going into this series against Houston. Yenesis Cabrera facing a 3-game suspension as a result of the push on Jose Caballeros on Saturday. Now, he's appealing. Typically what happens when you appeal is, well, I shouldn't say typically, quite often what happens when you appeal is you end up seeing the suspension dropped by a game. So instead of three games, it will be two games. That's really the only reason anybody appeals. So you're going into a series against a team with some good left-handed hitting, possibly down a left-handed pitcher. And you saw Chad Green yesterday, again, in a small sample size, one inning, coming in with a big lead, giving up a home run. What is your read on the bullpen? You know, a bullpen that right now looks like it's going to be without Eric Swanson and Jordan Romano, at least for the rest of the week. I think we can say they're probably going to have to go through Houston and New York without...
At least Swanson.
Sorry.
I would think Romano is probably a little quicker.
There's a chance both of them probably will be out.
Yeah, will be
out for a week.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
I don't know. Look, that just screams letting the starter go a little deeper. You know, this is probably, you know, we're getting closer to the second time through here. You know, some guys I would think Barrios gets a little longer leash, like, you know, maybe Bassett is a little bit more efficient with two strikes. You know, the cutter sinker command maybe is a little bit better. That will make the secondary stuff that much better, be a little bit more competitive. You know, first start again, it's like that throwing thing.
Yep.
You just, everybody's got to sort of get their feel, get past the heart rate up a little bit more than normal.
Did you see that with Kikuchi as well?
Yeah, I think Yusei's an overthrower. Like, he's more of a thrower than a pitcher. That's why he's missing the arm side a lot. And a lot of his timing is out of the glove. It has issues, right? Sometimes it is playing catch up. When it plays catch up, front shoulder flies open, arm drags, ball misses up and away to a righty, up and into a lefty. And then sometimes the secondary stuff, he chokes it off too much because he's really trying to overcompensate for playing catch up. Again, everything's bigger in that first start, right? It's louder. You know, the heart rate, you got to try and control that. I was behind him a couple of his bullpens in spring training. You know, he's letting it eat. Like, he feels very happy about himself.
Mm-hmm.
And when you tend to do that, sometimes you get outside your mechanics, and that's why the velocity of the fastball, you saw it go way up.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think this would be, if you're going to lean on something, lean on your starters. And in that way, it would make up for who you wouldn't want to go to in your pen. Right, so that's what I think. And again, I think they're leaning on a lot of that. The lineup's making up for some woes that they have. The pitching staff carried them all year last year. Right now, the offense needs to carry them a little bit more just to get past the injuries that they do have. So, you know, I think they can do that. I think offensively, you can tell. Now, Tampa Bay, if you'd notice, first game, they were attacking all quadrants. Second and third and fourth game, it was outer third to a bunch of righties. They were listening and reading the same thing that we've been reading and listening to, that saying all these hitters are trying to swing at pitches they can do damage on. Well, okay, I'll raise you cutters away and try and take the sting out of your bat, and if you hit my home run, two or three of them to right center, we'll give you that. So, you know, I think it's a combination of lean on your starters and obviously have your lineup score some more runs. That will help the pen, but the pen right now is what the pen is. Green and Garcia are going to get a bulk of the games that matter. Back in, eighth and ninth inning, them's the two dudes you're getting. Tim Mays, you could probably throw him in there against them lefties in Houston. And then there's sort of everybody else. Trevor Richards, I'm sure, is going to get some run because it's the changeup. I mean, that thing's good against righties and lefties. So I'm sure he'll get some higher leverage spots. And then again, you know, the team's good enough to overcome these things if everybody's doing what they can do to its fullest. And I'm sure it's sort of this second time through, the second series, you're past that first series, you know, getting used to the lights and the crowds and, you know, the everything's happening a little bit quicker. They've gotten past that now. They can move on and sort of get back to the nuts and bolts of everything and, you know, catching the ball, throwing the ball, running the bases, like all the little things it takes for a good team to win a game.
So, 2-2. First series of the year is done. Your most pleasant surprise?
Ooh.
And your biggest concern going into Houston?
I don't really have any big concerns. You know, I'm still wondering about Dalton Varsho, if he can hit fifth. What's he, 0-for-3 with a couple punchies with runners in scoring position? Like, it's sort of, you know, when push comes to shove, everybody knows what his weakness is. It's like Davis Schneider. How excited do I get about him hitting a home run on a ball down? I mean, when push comes to shove, he's getting the ball up.
Mm-hmm.
He knows it. I know it. Everybody else knows it. Like, can he handle and get past to, you know, at least give himself a chance? I don't really think there is any issues. Like, the 5 errors, you're not really worried about. The 6 double plays that they hit into, I don't know what that tells you a whole ton. Like, it's, you know, again, there's some obvious guys that if they hit the ball on the ground, it's an obvious, no doubt, double play, right? It's, again, I get back to that Ernie Clement trying to figure out who he is and how he can drive a ball with people on base. The at-bats are different. That, you know, guys like that don't grow on trees. It's a lot to ask. The Alejandro Kirks of the world, like, you know, he hits a ball on the ground because, you know, it's not the fastest of runners. It's probably a double play. So I would think that's the one thing is, you know, zoning in, trying to swing at something that you're for sure can square it up. If it goes on the ground, it goes on the ground. At least barrel it up. I'm thinking big part of the field, small part of the barrel. If I can do that, a lot of the times with traffic, hopefully they can stay away from those double plays. The stolen bases, yeah, I don't know. They're hitting 164 with 2 strikes. A lot of teams are going to do that. But, again, I asked John this when he came on Friday. I said, if you have the approach of do damage, that would mean your team is going to hit a lot more with 2 strikes. Have you guys had talks about that? That has to at least get a little bit better. Get it closer to 200. I mean, the pitching's never been better, mm-hmm. right? They throw harder, they throw all the secondary stuff, and they don't really have a fastball count. This is when you have to really zone in and not chase and really be mechanically sound. So I do think that has to go up. Is it a giant worry? Probably not. So I don't want to get too excited about that. The good things, Vladdy looks better. His bat looks quicker. Turner looks like he can do exactly what everybody wants him to do if he's probably DH'ing more than he's playing third. George Springer? I still want to see George Springer hit a fastball consistently, but look, it looks to me like the guessing that he's doing is working. When he's getting that curveball, he ain't missing it. That's a big deal, right? It's out and around. Every once in a while, you want to ambush it, get out and around, and yank it because your power no longer, because your age, is to right center. So I really like that. I love Gausman. I think that just takes their rotation to a whole different level. I love Berríos. I think Berríos is going to have a really, really good season. And for the most part, I like their base running. I don't think there's giant worries on the team. I think it's the obvious things. You came into the season, you were thinking about if they do these things, they can take their season to a different level. I don't think that's changed. And I think that's going to take sort of lunch pail days and weeks mm-hmm. for them just to get in there and grind it out. They grind it out because they're a good team and they have talent. And I do think the little bit of worry is the stiff neck for Bo, too. I think that is, you know, it looked to me like a couple of days there that his move was a little slower. Maybe that was why. So hopefully they can get past that. Obviously, they are a better lineup with him in it. So there's a few things. I think I'm with you. There's a lot more good things than there is bad things.
8:10 will be the first pitch tonight on Sportsnet 590. The Fan and Sportsnet as the Jays open a 3-game series against the Houston Astros. Again, their first 10 games on the road. They'll have an off day Thursday. Then they'll go into the Bronx to play the Yankees at Yankee Stadium. Buck Martinez is our Blue Jays analyst on Sportsnet. We'll talk to Buck about the concerns we have about the running game, and also we'll talk to Buck about the impact Justin Turner may already be having on this team. Don't go anywhere. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bowden Francis will get the start for the Blue Jays tonight against Ronel Blanco as the Jays open a 3-game series against the Houston Astros. The Astros swept by the New York Yankees in a 4-game series. Joe Espada's initiation into managing.
He's on the hot seat? Is that what we're saying?
He's on the hot seat, all right. Francis, of course, had a terrific spring. He had a 1.73 ERA, a 0.83. No, that was last season. He had a 0.83 with 36 in the third innings last season. Just gave up 7 earned runs in 18 and two-thirds innings over 5 games during spring training. Bowden Francis, I would suggest very early in spring training, especially given Alek Manoah's status, secured a spot in the team, and frankly secured a spot in the rotation very early in spring training. So I'm looking forward to seeing.
Me too.
Looking forward to seeing what he gives the Blue Jays tonight. The Jays are in Houston for the first of a three-game series. 8:10 is the first pitch. Buck Martinez is our Blue Jays analyst on Sportsnet, and he joins us on Blair and Barker. Buck, thank you so much for doing this.
Good afternoon, boys. How you doing today?
Well, that's what a run producer looks like, hey? Justin Turner?
Yeah. You know what? That's what he does. He just, he's got a slow heartbeat. He understands how to drive in runs. And, then that's what they got him for. So, all is well. You know what? After game two, everybody wanted to jump off the ship. And after game three, they were in the water. But they're back on board now as they split the four-game series.
Now, the water's shallow enough that you can get back on right now. We're not in deep water yet.
No, it's really interesting. You know, you look around baseball, the Mets are, 0-3, the Astros are 0-4, and Dusty Baker and Buck Showalter have to be sitting back going, uh-huh. So it wasn't me.
Buck, we had Justin on, a month and a half ago, and he was, and I was asking him about Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and just so happened he brought up that if he had any advice to give to Vladdy, it would be swing 80%. Don't try and swing 100% all the time. And then I've watched Justin the last couple of days have his at-bats, especially, you know, traffic on the bases, and it's exactly how he says it. Like, it is, you know, like you're still in a cage and somebody's flipping it to you and it's just nice and easy. Kick the leg and, you know, stay square with your shoulders and stay inside the baseball and have timing out front. Do you think, Buck, you've been around this team a little bit more than we have. You see them and talk to them every single day. Do you think that's contagious to people around him about the 80% swing?
Oh, absolutely, I do. And it's all about, you know what? I think Justin Turner said it well when he said, you know what? I'm not in trouble. The pitcher's in trouble. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for these younger players to understand that because they think, man, I can win the game right now. I can drive in a big run right now. The thing you have to remember is Justin Turner has 5,788 plate appearances in his major league career. He's done this for a long time. So he has seen just about everybody that he's going to face. He knows what they do, but he knows more than anything what he has to do to be effective in those situations. And it's honestly just another at-bat for him. But I love the phrase he used in spring training. He said, the closer the base runners get to home, the better hitter I am. And that makes a lot of sense.
Buck, if you hear a team talking out loud, I'm sure, you know, the Rays heard that and the Astros have heard that the Blue Jays are trying to 1-9 have a collision at-bat. Something that I swing at that I can do damage on. If you're a catcher and you hear that, how would you throw this team? And the only reason I ask you that is sort of the first game against the Rays, it was sort of all quadrants, right? I'm going to go in. I'm going to set it up with this pitch to go away. And then second, third, and fourth game, it was cutters away. It was sliders away. And if you miss away. Is if you're a catcher, is that what you would do against this team if you hear a team talking the way the Jays talk?
Well, what I would do is I would throw them strike one. And you don't have to necessarily throw them strike one with fastballs. I mean, you have to be able to locate your secondary pitches. And, you know, pitching strike one is the best formula for anybody. I don't care what kind of hitter you are. And, yeah, the Blue Jays are very aggressive. They like to swing at a lot of first pitches. But you just got to make a quality first pitch. And you know what Tampa Bay's philosophy over the years has been? If you throw a first pitch strike 95% of the time, it's not going to get hit. So don't worry about it. But everybody looks at the averages on the first pitch and says, wow, they're hitting 350 on the first pitch, 370 on the first pitch. You know why? Because they're not swinging at borderline pitches. They're waiting till they get one down the heart. That's why the average is so high. But if you look at the difference between 1-0 and 0-1, it's dramatic. So pitchers have to be aggressive. I don't care what kind of hitting team you have. If you get ahead, the batter then has fewer pitches to make decisions on what he can hit and what he can handle.
Buck, did you see all you needed to see from Kevin Gausman yesterday? And how many starts, assuming good health here, how many starts do you think it will take for Kevin to catch up to where he would normally be?
Well, I said that after he pitched against Bradenton. You know, he pitched against the Pirates, so what, the last Monday of the spring training, and he pitched three innings, struck out seven, didn't walk a batter, and he was up to 97. You know, Kevin's pitched so long, he understands his body, and, he, you know, spring training is for the pitchers, and, yeah, everybody wants to see some innings and repetition. Well, innings and repetition were good for Kikuchi last year, and they were good for Bowden Francis this year. Chris Bassitt, Jose Barrios, Kevin Gausman, they just need to feel right. And I think when Kevin made that appearance against the Pirates last Monday, he felt good, and then he carried it right into his first start. I think it's going to take him, and I said this on the air, I think it's going to take him about four starts before you can really turn it loose and say, okay, he's good to go. But John Snyder, you know, he said, I don't want to waste any Kevin Gausman starts. Remember, he only made 31 last year. I say only because everybody else made 32. Mm-hmm. But I think Kevin knows where he's at, and I really like where he's at. I think we saw exactly what we expect from Kevin Gausman.
Buck, Rays stole six bases in the four games. Should Jays fans be worried about that?
I think baseball should be worried about that. Already there have been 95 attempts in the season. Last year there were 84 attempts, so people are going to run. And you know what? You know what? And I told Brian Servin this down in Tampa Bay. I said, you know, I feel bad for you guys because you don't throw enough. The catchers don't throw enough. When I was playing, we threw every single day because we took infield. You know, we would take infield every day. So as a catcher, either Ernie and I, both whoever was starting, would take the first round of infield and throw the third, second. And then the second catcher would throw the second round of infield to third and second. So you might make 8 to 10 to 12 throws a day. So, you know, our throwing was important because base stealing was important for offenses back then. And once again, we're seeing it's becoming more and more important. And everybody is quick to say, well, you know, they put a lot of pressure on the defense to shut down a running game because of the two throwovers and the step-off rule and the bigger bases. Catchers don't throw enough. They don't have arm strength enough. And you look at the guys who lead the world, they have strong arms. Their pitchers are aware. But I think in general, the defenses don't throw enough.
Buck, are we almost at the point with this? Because this is something we've talked about for a couple of seasons. And, you know, as Kevin mentioned in the first half of the show, I don't know if I want Chris Bassitt worrying about having to speed up in order to control the running game. I don't know if I want Jordan Romano and Kevin Gausman sidestepping in order to control the running game. Do we almost just have to, I mean, I hate to say just take this for granted or just assume this, but are we almost at the point with this team where it hasn't changed for the past 3 or 4 years, I don't think. And my own feeling is I doubt if it's going to change now. This is kind of what they are.
Yeah, and you know what? It goes back to Juan Guzman when he was starting in the 90s for the Blue Jays. You know, he didn't hold on runners very well, but he struck everybody out, so it didn't make any difference. And I think that's one thing that you can do as a pitcher. The best way to help shut down the running game is to throw strike one. Because when you do that, you eliminate the number of pitches a base dealer has to steal bases. And, you know, I think there were a couple times where Siri stole in the Tampa Bay series where there were two step-offs, so he had a running start. Rosarena did it the same way at third base. But, you know, it's part of the game. And, you know, once again, you put – here's my philosophy on this whole thing. Throw out the guys you're supposed to throw out, and the base stealers are going to steal bases. Mm-hmm. So you just can't give away the stolen base to the guy that steals 8 a year. The guys that steal 30 a year, you're not going to throw them out very often under the rules the way they are. But the guy that steals 8 to 10 bases, you better throw him out. Because he's the guy you have a shot at.
Buck, I want to be very confident in Chad Green whenever he, you know, is getting called on to whenever he's coming out of the pen to pitch. But for some reason, I'm not. Should I not be confident in him when he comes out of the pen?
I'm very confident in him. For me, I go back to his last outing in spring training when he faced Bryce Harper, JT Realmuto, and Alec Bohm and struck them out, and they were flat overmatched. And, yeah, I gave up a home run in Tampa Bay. That doesn't bother me, especially in a situation where he was into the game just to throw. He was a little bit rusty. He hadn't pitched in a while. He hadn't pitched since the last Saturday of spring training. So, yeah, I'm not too concerned about Chad Green. I love Chad Green down in the bullpen. He's going to be a guy they lean on until you get Romano and Swanson back. So Chad Green and Jimmy Garcia are going to be the guys that are going to close out games for him. And I'm very confident in Chad Green.
Buck, what are you expecting from Bowden Francis tonight? Or to be a little more exact, what does Bowden Francis have to do tonight to be successful against Houston?
Pitch like Bowden Francis can pitch. I think he has extreme confidence in his fastball, which I love. He has the unusual 12-6 curveball, which I love. You know, you don't see many of those anymore. And it goes back to the advent of the inside chest protector for umpires. And you say, well, how does that affect anything? Because the strike zone became lower. When the inside chest protector came into the American League from the National League, the umpires got in that slot and their strike zone became lower. So that curveball that was oftentimes called a strike up in the zone was kind of penalized because of that. But Bowden Francis has a terrific curveball, and his fastball, he'll hit 95 once in a while, but it's hard for the hitters to pick it up. They don't see it well. And, you know, Bowden last year, he had a real good run in relief. He had a stretch of 12 and a third innings of scoreless relief. He didn't allow a run in 14 of his 20 appearances. I love this guy. He reminds me of Jim Clancy physically. Big, strong, strapping guy on the mound. And he told me, he says, I want to start. I said, why do you want to start? He says, because the starter sets the tone for the game. When you relieve, the tone has already been set, and you just have to come in and pitch according to the way the game is going. But he really looks forward to this start tonight, and I think he's going to be good.
Buck, do you like Springer's swing so far early in the season?
What's not to like about it?
Yeah, good point.
He's in a good spot. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know, that's what, you know, baseball fans have a tendency to worry about what a hitter can't do. Well, let's talk about what they can do. You know, and George has been a premier leadoff hitter for a long time, and he's in good shape. And more than anything, he told me something I thought was very interesting in spring training. I went over to him and I asked him, George, what was your season like? He said, I tried to do too much. He said, I tried to be the man. And then he pointed over his shoulder with his thumb. He says, that's the man next to me. And that was Justin Turner. So now George understands he doesn't have to carry the offense. And I think that's going to be true for Bo and Vladdy as well. They know that they got a guy that they saw produce yesterday that's going to be consistent in that regard, and they don't have to be the guy to carry the offense. They've got one horse that can do that in Justin Turner.
Last question from us before we let you run. Ernie Clement, a guy that obviously been talked a lot about in spring training and at the end of last year. Buck, I just get the sense that John Schneider, the coaching staff, they have an awful lot of confidence and a real high comfort level with this guy, don't they? Regardless of where they put him.
Absolutely. Yeah, they sure do. And, you know, DeMarlo Hale had him in Cleveland when he was a bench coach for Terry Francona. Mm-hmm. And the one thing DeMarlo told me about Ernie was Ernie has the knack for sitting for a week, 7-8 days, coming into the game defensively, making all the plays, and having a good at-bat late in the game. And we've seen some of his skill set. I love his skill set. For me, he's got the quickest hands on the team defensively, and he has learned how to hit now. He understands that early in his career, he was trying to hit breaking balls and trying to hit off-speed pitches, and he said, you know what, in limited playing time, I have to focus on the fastball and be ready to hit a fastball when I see one. So I think that's really kind of interesting, but I like Ernie Clement. I think the coaching staff likes him, and I think, you know, the more he comes through for them, the more he's going to play. You know, it's that age-old adage, managers like guys that hit and play well.
Yes, it's remarkable how that turns out, isn't it? Buck, thanks for doing
it's
this, as
stuff.
Always, my friend. Be well.
You're the best, buddy.
Happy April Fool's Day, boys.
Oh,
yeah,
thank you.
You too, thanks.
See you, Buck.
Buck Martinez, Blue Jays analyst in Sportsnet. It used to be the worst day to do sports radio was April Fool's Day when you were doing call-in shows, because you'd always have to be careful. Somebody would call up and, or you know, have to be careful on social media because somebody would tweet out something that was.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting to hear Buck talk about the controlling the running game and catchers not throwing. I just don't know how they would expect Alejandro Kirk, because of his body type, to be out taking infield and outfield 3 or 4 times a week. Maybe they think he can. I mean, does his arm look like it's gotten stronger since he's been in the big leagues?
No.
Then, obviously, it is. Obviously, they're thinking that there's other things more important to his job than him going out and making his arm stronger. Because he's got serious run on his ball, right? I mean, he's got a quick release point. It's just it's got serious run up the line, right? Would tell you that just the carry on his ball is not always there. That's, I don't know, is that up to the pitcher? Now, the pitchers don't do the greatest of jobs because they're thinking more about executing and striking a guy out than they are the guy at first. And, again, it gets back to that. Would you rather them be thinking about the guy at first? I just thought, again, maybe it does get better. You know, I guess it would be easier just to not to let him get on first. But I just don't know how it gets better. Like, again, I think we're going to see more of the pickoffs at second, and maybe that will help. But it's just interesting to hear catchers talk about the running game, and it's up to the catcher to, you know, sort of try to eliminate the base runner. And it's not always the pitcher's fault, that kind of thing.
Here's the thing, though, and I think Joe talked about this. Joe Siddle talked about this a little bit on Blue Jay Central. I mean, I'm with you. Alejandro Kirk's throwing arm is what it is. It's not going to get any. It's just not going to change. Mm-hmm. But Joe thought he saw a little something different. And I think the play, if I'm not mistaken, the play Joe was talking about, Kirky actually kind of messed up the exchange on it. But it looked like it just looked a little different. It looked like he was quicker to stand before he threw the ball. And I think Joe was talking about that. But I don't, I mean, here's the thing, if you're Alejandro Kirk, you know that one of your strengths is framing. And I sometimes think that guys, that we focus so much on that other aspects of the game kind of go by the wayside. Alejandro Kirk's first responsibility isn't controlling the running game. It's getting a strike for the pitcher. And sometimes I just think that you have to, that's just the way it is.
Yeah. I don't think he can get out of control. I mean, I
like what Buck said, though. You know what? You should be able to, the dude who steals 6 bases a year. Okay. Then maybe you take a different approach with that. But I mean, I don't know what the hell they're going to do to stop Jose Siri stealing bases.
Well, I think that's up to the pitcher too, a lot of the times, right? Not taking the big, you know, getting the big leg kick and slide stepping and, you know, maybe getting your sign a little quicker, holding the ball a little longer, making them stand over there and not get happy feet. Like, there's little things you could probably do to throw off the timing of a good base runner, but a lot of that's arm strength. Somebody knows, an opposing team knows, that catcher's got a really strong arm. You better do everything right or you're out. Do you think they're worried about either catcher the Jays have? I would think not. That's why they're going to run all over the place, and they're not afraid to steal third. So I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal, even if they were one of the worst teams in baseball doing it, which I think they're – what's going to change? I didn't see Yusei Kikuchi on the half field slide-stepping. Mm. I saw him trying to, you know, look the same with his pick off the first. I saw him trying to pick somebody off second. I didn't see him trying to be quicker to home. So it's almost like they're saying, don't do that part of it. Be better at the other part of it.
Which makes that makes a certain amount of sense.
I guess. It just seems to me like if you're a good base runner and you're a smart guy, it'd be easy pickings for you.
Know, listen, this is a conversation that we've had regarding the Blue Jays literally for years. I mean, I can remember talking to Pete Walker about this when he was first pitching coach. And the approach was kind of, well, you know, we kind of want our guys to focus on, you know, throwing strikes and taking care of the guy at the plate and, you know, don't give up the stolen base, don't give up the 2-run home run. I mean, all the stuff that you hear. And I almost just get the impression that the organization just realizes that all you can do is really talk about it.
Well, I know they've been talking about it because, again, I'm not afraid to say out loud, Petey did yell at me. Like, basically, I didn't know what I was talking about. And it's pretty cut and dry for me. You either give up a stolen base or you don't. Like, what's the underlying numbers tell you that I'm not seeing? I see that you gave up 131 stolen bases last year. That was 6th worst in baseball. Like, that should get better because you're smarter and realize that even the slowest of base runners will try and steal off of you because they don't think either you know how to pick off at first or your catcher's got a really bad arm. So, I don't think it's that big of a deal, but because there's some unknowns with your offense and every run matters, you would think they would at least pay a little bit more attention to that.
that was obviously our first look at the Rays. The Jays don't play, they don't go into Tampa again, I think, until September or something like that. We've talked about this a little bit in the American League East. Is this the year that the Rays run out of their pixie dust? You know, they had to make some changes to their lineup, obviously. They don't have Wander Franco. Manuel Margot went in the trade. You know, Tyler Glasnow's not there. We know all the moves they've had to make. They've got some injuries. You think any less of the Rays after this series?
Yeah, they might be a little less balanced. I mean, you know, Kevin Cash last year could run out a whole lefty lineup against the righty and a whole righty lineup against the lefty.
There might be a reason they're stressing stolen bases so much in Tampa.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're trying to put pressure. You know, the new rules helps them do that a little bit. And they got the guys. They got athletes all over the field. And I don't think their rotation's as good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where are they getting the innings from? They need a couple of guys to give them 150-plus innings. Do they have that? I mean, I think their pen's really good. I think that'll be good all year.
Yeah, they'll make it work. They'll put it together.
Arm angles and how much they throw a certain pitch. And Kevin Cash is like a mad scientist, you know, putting them in the right spot and those kind of things. It's about, can they score enough runs, which would probably mean, can they hit enough home runs? And can their rotation give them enough innings? I would look at quality starts maybe this year with them. If their quality starts go up, it might be the same old Rays. If it goes down and it stays the same as it has been, maybe it'll be a little tougher, but it's still the Rays. Like, you know, the Rays put pressure on you.
Yeah.
You got to play good to beat them.
Yeah, there's just something. Maybe I think balance and depth is the key.
That's when I look at that
lineup. When I looked at that lineup, I feel fairly comfortable underplaying them this year. And I know that's, you know, people have done that in the past, and it's proven to be dangerous.
Some could say that's the Blue Jays too, right? I mean, how many people are scared to death of Arsho? Scared to death of Gavin Biscio? Like, I just make Kiermaier oozing fear in you? Like, there's... Wait,
you know what, though? You make a list of the people that the Rays have turned over or have lost, and it is staggering. It is staggering how much they have just turned over that team and the really impactful players they lost. On the other hand, I guess, you know, as I said, people, you do overreact at this time of year. Think the Yankees fans are a little excited right now after what they saw?
I would think so. How do you think the Astros feel?
I mean,
losing four games in a row to the Yankees, who you've been pretty good against.
You've beaten up generally.
And how you lost to them. Like, you know, there were some close games. Your middle of your bullpen wasn't real good in those four games. Your rotation looked good considering the couple of guys that aren't there, right? I mean, they're missing some key guys, and you know they still pitched really well in their starting rotation. It's their bullpen, which you didn't think was going to be that way. And again, I think
that's the bridge to the two dudes at the end is what
it is. But again, it's the middle of the order for the Yankees. It's really good too.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, it's not the easiest to work through, and they've only hit two homers. Like, that's, they just missed a couple of balls from winning two or three of the
Jordan
games.
Jordan Alvarez.
Yeah. So, you know, again, it's a game of inches, and it's early in the season, and everybody, like, I was fortunate enough to be a part of one opening day weekend. It's a big thing. Just everything's lighter. It's louder. It's not spring training. And you got to control everything, and sometimes you overswing, you're out in front, you're thinking about even the greatest ones. Just sort of sometimes let the moment get a little ahead of them because it's the first week, and your just body's getting used to everything that's around it. Instead of that, I'm honing in on you. How are you trying to get me out with two strikes? And you just miss it.
Better to open up
on the Astros.
Better to open up on the road or at home.
I don't know. The Jays would tell you they hate hitting at home. So maybe this is a better thing if they start on the road like they have.
Yeah.
Get a little confidence that everything they've worked on. This is what I said, 6-4, and I'm going to stick with it. It's a big thing.
Shai Davidi, Sportsnet's MLB insider, will join us in a few minutes. Jeff Blum, Houston Astros TV analyst, World Series champion with the White Sox. The man has a statue of himself in front of a stadium, for goodness sake. He will join us to give us a scouting report on the winless Astros. 8 o'clock, first pitch tonight. Don't go anywhere. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And if you're watching us on TV, it's Sportsnet.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Adam Francis gets a start tonight for the Blue Jays against the Houston Astros. Ronald Blanco. 8:10 will be the first pitch on Sportsnet. 590 The Fan and Sportsnet. Blair and Barker will be doing Blue Jays talk tonight.
Ooh.
Following the game.
No warm milk for you.
Might be a bourbon night.
You think so? Hey, by the way, happy 100th. Huh? Your birthday a couple days ago?
Yeah.
How's it feel to be?
You could have wished me a happy birthday on Friday.
Why would I do that? Was it Friday?
Your birthday was Saturday.
happy birthday.
Yeah.
How was your weekend?
It was good. It's good. You know, you only turn 55 so often.
Wow. Yeah. So we're subtracting numbers now.
Huh? It's good. Yeah. Derek Brandeo, our technical director, says once in a century.
Should have went out. Don't you get it like a half price or a certain card?
Thursdays that I won't give out the name of the pharmaceutical chain, but Thursdays, yes, qualify for seniors.
I was saying food.
Yeah.
Not medicine.
When you get old, what's more important, medicine or food?
Happy birthday anyway, buddy.
And then I think I get the Marriott senior discount next year, which I'm really looking forward to.
That means rooms half off?
I think it just means they have rooms on the lower floors.
that's why my dad always asked for a bottom floor room.
I never do. I always ask for the top floor.
You do?
Yeah.
It's quieter up there.
It is quieter up there. Mm-hmm. It's much quieter.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
Well, happy birthday.
Yeah, thanks.
You don't have a day over 40.
It was a great birthday.
Nice.
Everybody in our family has daughter's birthday is the same day, wife's birthday is today, 2 days later.
Nice. So
it's all kind of.
Wow.
It all kind
of
works
together.
Did you
get her something nice?
Yeah.
You didn't?
Me.
That's what you're going with, huh?
That's what I'm going with, yeah. Should we talk about Mitch White so we can change the subject a bit here? Give Mitch White some love. First major league win for the Mitchster.
Yeah. Well, look.
And I mean, I know how you feel about him. So I just
look, the only question I would have is when are you going to use him?
Like, the way they used him yesterday perfect.
I understand that. But coming into the season, I think the question you'd have to ask yourself is, and Buck even mentioned that, throwing strike one. He faced 11 batters yesterday. He threw 10 strike ones. Now, sort of the bad thing when Mitch is bad is the secondary stuff rarely, when he's behind, plays.
He has a hard time finishing guys off.
Well, that and sort of, you know, if those even counts, right, those flip counts where if I want to throw a slider that I can steal a strike with, say, in a 2-1 count to get back into the count because I'm behind all the time, and that hitter knows that, you know, the slider and the breaking ball, it was still his breaking ball. It's still a work in progress. I know he's tried to steal the grip from Wes Parsons, you know, gripping it a different way to try and get it to at least stay in the zone longer. He may have wanted to break more, but he wants it to tunnel longer to, you know, actually maybe get a swing and miss or two or three from a hitter. But, look, he had decent velocity yesterday. He threw enough strike ones. Like I mentioned, the curveball, I don't really know what that is. The slider. Look, yeah, I think the slider was what the slider was. It was, for me, get ahead, outer thirds. If you can stay away from the middle of the plate because your stuff's not good enough to live there, maybe you can sort of force the hand and you know, keep you a spot in the bullpen. So I just sort of asked that question. I just don't know, other than where we saw him yesterday, when they using him?
Yeah.
That's the thing, right? Are you bringing him in with a lead with, you know, a one-run lead in his seventh inning? You got other guys to do that. That's the thing. So, you know, this sort of, I think, is something to build off of. It should give him confidence and that his velocity was good and that he was throwing strike one and, you know, his slider was good enough and the fastball location was good enough and he can get a lefty out. That's the thing, too, right, is, you know, it's sort of that same little pocket and the right window of when you'd bring him in. You feel comfortable with him against a couple of lefties in a row in a big spot in the game? So I just don't think he's there yet, but maybe they think because the velocity's up a little bit and he's throwing more strike one because he has confidence in mechanics that maybe they can start throwing him in more spots like that. But I think it's a step forward. I do think it was that. He should gain a little confidence from that. You know, forget about the score. I think that was more about him. that he got the outs when he was supposed to get them, which is a big deal for him.
Well, and you know, we've talked about, I think Bowden Francis, obviously, he's going to start tonight. He's in the rotation, but there's still going to be some concern about Alek Manoah. And Kevin Gausman is not yet built up. So, you know, credit Mitch White for taking advantage of the opportunity that's presented to him.
Yeah, now he had a leadoff walk up 7-1. That's things you don't ever want to do. It's that sort of gets back to that.
Finishing guys
just,
off.
Well, it's just all of it, right? It's the totality of, you know, when you get ahead, stop nibbling. Like, trust your stuff. Seems like sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. And how do you get him to where all the time, no matter what? You know, sort of, he's predictable. Is Mitch White right now today predictable? No. Yeah, you can do that and then sort of, I don't think he's there quite yet. But you would think having these and you know, looking at the numbers the way he does, see, I still laugh about the iPad and the person standing in the, you know, when he was throwing his bullpen in spring training and he's asking break on secondary. I'm sure he's working on sinkers and you know, how's the slider look off my sinker? Is it breaking enough? I would think by now, as old as Mitch is, that he would know if it was breaking enough. Like, that's the thing. That's sort of what comes with Mitch, right, is – how do you self-correct on the mound to be good enough that they're not afraid to run you out there in big spots? That, I think, is what he's trying to work towards. Maybe yesterday was a step in that direction.
What do you think of, and I know we're just waiting for Shai Davidi to join us, what do you think of Nate Pearson?
Yeah, look, I think it's the same.
It's pretty apparent that there's going to be leverage at some point in these next three games.
Especially who they don't have, absolutely.
Especially considering who they don't have. With Cabrera, I don't like the phrase somebody's going to have to step up, but there's an opportunity here for one of those guys to, especially to me, a guy like Nate Pearson, there's some opportunity here. Basically, it could be down three of your higher leverage arms in a three-game series against Houston. You know, if Cabrera's suspension goes through.
Yep.
If you're Nate Pearson, that's opportunity.
Yeah, or even right now, you got to figure he's probably the fourth righty they would go to. That's sort of the way you have to look at it. I mean, it's, you know, what's the expectations with Nate Pearson? That I think is, you know, again.
Maybe it's good to not have any expectations.
I think that's sort of the where you're at with him is, you know, it's, he comes out and you like the velocity and he's maintaining that and the breaking stuff looks the way it's supposed to look and his misses are competitive. You know, sometimes he's grip it and rip it, and you know, they're non-competitive out of the hand. The pitch count goes up. The pitches per plate appearance go up. And then, you know, you're sort of searching for what you're trying to get from him, and then you got to get guys loose around him, and that sort of disrupts what you're trying to do. So, yeah, I just don't know what we're supposed to expect from Nate. Is it shut down innings every time he goes out there, or is it just do enough to, you know, help? I think that, for me anyway, is where sort of if he's in the right pocket, if his fastball velocity and command is somewhat on point, will make the secondary stuff better. You know, the split finger, are you excited to see that? Who are you throwing it to? I mean, would he throw it to a good lefty in a big spot? That's sort of, you know, you like the velocity, you like his size.
You might get a chance to see it this series. Again, if Cabrera's not there.
I think they're, you know, he's pitching. Like, they're going to pitch him.
Yeah.
He's on the team.
Yeah.
And what they don't have, he's pitching. Like, they can't, you know, pitch Chad Green and Jimmy Garcia all the time and Tim Mesa and, you know, Trevor Richards. They can't do that all the time. So he's going to get some run. It's just how much run and when are they going to give that run to him. But,
yeah. It's, you know, I was thinking about this watching the Rays game, though. It's. Obviously, Romano's the closer, and Swanson is a leverage guy. But when you see both of them out, it really does just reinforce how much John Schneider is going to have to match up. I would think even when Jordan Romano comes back, and I think you're right, he's probably further along because Eric Swanson wasn't even built up.
Mm-hmm.
Even when Jordan Romano comes back, I know John. One of the things John said in one of his last media avails in Florida was, when Jordan Romano's back with the team, he wants to be able to use him back-to-back days. He wants him to be ready to be treated as if he was a closer any other time. Do you think that's realistic to do that? Or do you think that he may still have to baby him a little bit when he comes back.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, they're going to work him in the ninth inning.
Like, yeah.
He's I don't know about that. I mean, I know they have faith in Jimmy Garcia. They really like his stuff. They love Jack Green. Right. Like, they, you know, there's some, if it went, they love enough guys, I think, to give Jordan sort of the time and room that he needs to be the best Jordan mm-hmm. that he could possibly be. So, yeah, again, this gets back to just, you know, every little part of your game, be good at it. Offensively, step it up, have better at bat, score more runs, make it a little easier for how you're going to use certain guys at the back end. It'll be interesting to see, and we can ask Shy about this.
Yep.
Everybody's healthy. Not the two guys that are not here. Shy, I'll bring you in right now. Say Chad Green and Jimmy Garcia are both rested and ready to go. No matter where they're, say it's 2-3-4 for the Yankees or for the Astros. Who gets the ball?
Interesting question. I'd have to dig into the matchups a little bit, see maybe who would be, if you're talking, you know, 1-2-3, who's better suited to handle Alvarez and Tucker for the Astros, say, between Jimmy, you know, maybe Jimmy in that spot, although, you know, because he's got a few more pitches he could throw at the lefties there to discombobulate them a bit more. But it's really a toss-up between those two guys. I don't know that he prefers one over the other. We did see Chad sort of get closer treatment yesterday with the ninth inning, even though it was mop-up. It was just get him some work in the ninth there. But that's typically what you would do with a closer. But I think the point that you were making earlier is maybe the most valid one right now, is that for tight games, I'm not sure how the Blue Jays nurse a lead right now, inning 6-9, if mm-hmm. you're up by one.
Yep.
And until Romano and Swanson gets back, I think that's going to be a little bit hairy for this team.
Shy, what was your takeaway from Kevin Gausman's performance yesterday? And I'll ask you the same question, because I know you talked to Kevin. What is his timetable for being back to where he should be in the regular season?
Well, I mean, let's start with that second one. And he was 69 pitches yesterday, so you figure it'll be 85-ish mm-hmm. next time out. And then from there, you're getting closer to 100. So you're looking at two starts until he's just about full go, or maybe could be full go or close to full go in that second one. So this is a pretty normal path, a pretty good one, and all things considered, given how his spring went, a relatively painless one for the Blue Jays. In terms of how he looked yesterday, I mean, I just can't imagine a guy who's got one spring training game under his belt taking a mound against a really good Rays lineup and just tearing them up the way that he did. I mean, just tells you when he's on how good he is and how overpowering he can be. And you know, I used to think about this a lot when Roy Halladay was on the team and just sort of what a privilege it was to watch him pitch every 5 days. And I sort of got that feeling a little bit watching Kevin Gausman the last two outings, the yesterday and the one, the spring training. You know, when he's there and he's ready to go, I mean, he is really fun to watch on them out.
Shy, what do you think? What do you think they need to work on with Yusei just to keep him in the zone a little more, bit more? Shy, his stuff can be off the charts. Like when he's at the velocity that he was at in his last start, it makes the secondary stuff look that much better. Is there something that you're hearing that maybe, you know, the finish needs to be a little bit better, or the release point, or, you know, just something to get him in the zone a little bit more to maybe get him just a little bit deeper into a game?
Yeah, I mean, the fastball command was great, and it was really the one pitch he had going for him. And that's the way he managed to get through, you know, 4+ against the Rays with only 3 games, because otherwise it could have been a lot rougher. But with him, it's interesting because when the fastball is in the zone, like you said, then the slider plays better, but he didn't really have the slider. And so I think maybe that led him to try and be a bit finer with the fastball than he might otherwise have been. And then the thing they really think will help pull it together even more is if he's able to use that changeup more effectively. And so he wasn't carrying the zone with it early in the game. And then it got better towards the end of the outing. He got three weak ground ball or 3 weak contact outs with it, and then one strikeout with a changeup. So he did a little bit better with it towards the end of that outing. But if he has that, then maybe he's not trying to paint all the time with that fastball, and he's just because he's got enough, he's got his secondary working that he can just put the fastball in the zone a little bit and beat guys because they have to respect the changeup and the slider. But because he didn't have that slider and changeup quite the way that he needed, he didn't say this explicitly, but I just got the impression that he felt maybe he had to be a little bit more fine with the fastball than he otherwise might have been.
Shai, how satisfied do you think the Blue Jays were? Hey, it's just four games. I get that. But how satisfied do you think the Blue Jays and the coaching staff were to see Vladdy Jr. get off to the start that he got after the spring he's had? Just the way he looks at the plate, his swing looks faster. You know, I talked about even just small sample size, the launch angle. I mean, there's a lot of good things to like in those four games if you're focusing on Vladdy.
Yeah, I mean, that home run in the first game, that's one of those statement homers, right? That's you don't hit one 450 feet to straightaway center. I don't know that I've ever seen a homer land there at the Trop before. You don't hit that by accident. Mm-hmm. So I think that definitely resonated with everybody and made an impression. Some of the walks also made an impression. And it was more, I think the thing that I heard brought up is just there was a consistency to a game plan. Mm-hmm. And that wavered last year. And why that wavered, you know, he talked about feeling the expectation sometimes and trying to force things when he shouldn't have. And he feels that that's different for him this year. And, you know, again, four games, let's not make too much out of it, but that's what you wanted to see out of him. He looked the way you want him to look. And, you know, if that home run is a harbinger of what's ahead, then it's going to be a pretty fun year for him.
Yeah, it is funny because if he was 0 for 16 or something, we'd be making a lot out of that as well. So I always, but it is true. You can't read too much into a small sample size, but it is kind of fun overreacting early in the season. Mm-hmm. It really is, because everybody does it. Even if they don't talk about it internally, everybody's overreacting. Like, you're just looking. I'm looking at the Yankees after that sweep of the Astros, and I'm going, I mean, what if they're that good? You know?
And the Astros are definitely thinking, like, well, we got to get ourselves going.
Exactly.
What's going on with us? But I think for the Jays, look, the Rays are a good pitching team. It's a team that knows them really well. It's a team that does a great job of picking at their weaknesses. And so for them to, you know, two games in which they score 8 and 9 runs, then you have like the polar opposite games where they get 1 and 2. But you saw enough signs there to say, okay, we're doing some things right. Mm-hmm. Are we 100% where we want to be? Sure. No, of course not. But that there's enough to build on there that you feel satisfied with the opening weekend, understanding that there's still work to do.
Shai, do you think they are concerned with that they made 5 errors in the 4 games, or they hit into 6 double plays, or they allowed 6 stolen bases, or they hit 164 with 2 strikes? Any of those 4 things do you think that they are concerned about? Again, it's 4 games. I'm not really about any of these. Maybe the 6 stolen bases, but that seems like a thing. Me and Jeff's already had this conversation. I think the other parts of those things that I just mentioned, they can clean up. What's your thoughts on those things?
So I'm curious. I'm going to sort of throw that series out because that new surface at the Trop is very strange, especially on the infield. And what you'd really see there is the ball's really slow on that turf and then sort of takes off once it gets on the dirt. And there were a couple plays, even on plays the Blue Jays infielders made. There's one with Biggio that really comes to mind, where you just see like a really strange reaction as they're fielding it. And so I kind of want to throw that out. And if you see them play like that again in Houston this week and New York, then it'd be like, okay, maybe we should pay attention to this. But I'm kind of tempted to just throw that one out. The stolen bases were like Siri and Caballero were just a problem for them every time they were on. And and Arozarena too. They just sort of had their way with the Blue Jays, and the new rules with the less timing, or the 2 seconds less on the pitch clock, all that stuff is really complicated. And the Blue Jays did some work on it. They thought, okay, you know, the Yusei Kikuchi in particular, be able to handle it, control the running game, but it didn't happen for them on a consistent enough basis. You know, as much as you'd like to say, oh, well, maybe Kirk or Servin need a throw back, I mean, they just didn't really have a chance on a lot of those stolen bases. And so those are as much on the pitchers as they are on the catchers. That's a problem. And I think that's going to be a problem for a lot of teams, but the Blue Jays, you know, they spent a lot of time trying to keep the Rays runners close. They spent a lot of time making pickoffs and just doing different things with their infielders. None of it worked. And so, you know, not every team has a few guys who can run quite like those guys, quite like the Rays do, but the ones that do, they're going to give the Blue Jays problems.
Understanding that we have yet to see the Jays lineup for tonight, what was your read on Bo Bichette's neck spasms? And I'm not going to make excuses for him, but any connection between the neck spasms and a couple of errors that he made?
So I hadn't heard that. You know, what I had wondered if there was any connection to maybe some of the tussling that occurred after the benches cleared on Saturday night, but I didn't see anything, any sort of movement that was jarring enough that might have caused it. All that we were told was that he woke up with it on Sunday morning out of the blue, and rather than trying to push it early, just said, hey, just rest it up, you know, take the flight, take the rest into Houston, and then go from there. So beyond that, I don't have anything more, but it did not sound like something people were particularly concerned about. But ultimately, we'll see. And anytime anything involves a player of Bo Bichette's caliber, you definitely want to keep your eye on it.
Shai, I don't know about you. I like their team. It just seems like, you know, they're going to be there. They're probably not the best team in the American League East. They're probably not the best team in the American League. You know, they're going to fight for one of those spots. But I think they're a really good team. Like, Turner makes sense. Varsho right now hitting a five-hole makes sense. Ernie Clement making the team makes sense. Like, moving Vladdy in the two-hole makes sense. Like, putting Biggio in the nine-hole makes sense. Like, you know, Bowden Francis starting makes sense. Like, they just sort of – everything they've done, at least early on here, makes sense. And I got to be honest, I like their team. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good early impression. And look, I think the Rays are going to be a problem. I know everyone is in a rush to write them off, but they just – I love what Yandy Diaz and Randy Arozarena do for them at the top of that lineup. Those guys are both menaces, and they just have a lot of pesky at bats. Brandon Lau looks like he's healthy and ready to go. I think that's a good challenge, and that's a good litmus test. And the Blue Jays were right there with them. You know, there were two games where the Rays got the best of them, two games where the Jays got the best of them, and you can make the case that a couple pitches change in the second game there. If that double play gets made just before the Brandon Lau grand slam, then maybe that game, that whole outing changes for Chris Bassett. And we're talking about a different ballgame there too. So I think that's a good showing against a team that provides a good test. And the Blue Jays will be, at least the way they're set up right now, they'll be a little bit Rays-like in that you'll have lots of different combinations that you can play based on the matchup that's there. And it's going to be very different from what we've seen in recent years. You know, this team had a very clear identity in 21 and 22. And we thought they'd have it into 23 as a team that bashes and then pitches around that. It's a bit of a different identity now. It's a bit of potentially a different identity for this year's group compared to last year. And there's going to be a process where they find themselves, but I think they have a lot of tools that can help them be competitive. Will it be enough though? I mean, I still feel like at some point they're going to be looking to add a bat to help deepen that lineup, but they've done, they've put them there. This should be a team that gives them a chance to do something at the deadline to push them over the edge.
Yep. Yeah, who knows, Shai? Maybe we'll end up looking back on 2023 as being some sort of a transition year where the Jays discovered something wasn't working. Maybe it was the new ballpark, whatever. They discovered something wasn't working and changed tack. And that may be the case. It may have been a transition year.
Yeah, it's, I mean, look, what they tried to accomplish last season, which was clean up some of the defensive and pitching deficiencies that had cost them in 20 and 21 and 22, they went into the season thinking like, okay, that's that. And then maybe they overcompensated a bit or underestimated how much they'd miss Teoscar Hernandez and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. You know, maybe it's like if you keep one of those two guys, then we're having a different conversation. But yeah. Now they've just sort of expanded their toolkit. And look, they need Justin Turner to be good. They need the best version of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette. There's no doubt about that. They need Alejandro Kirk and Dalton Varsho closer to the best versions themselves. Even though it's not starting out that way, they need Danny Jansen to be on the field as much as possible so you can take advantage of his power. If all those things happen, it's a lot of ifs, but all that will work with a tighter defense. And then obviously Isaiah Kiner-Falefa has got to help make up for not having Matt Chapman's glove at third base. And I think there were a couple times over the weekend where you're like, oh yeah, that's where you miss Matt Chapman. Yeah. And there's no way around that. But I think that if you look at sort of a 26-man roster, this might be holistically a more complete 26-man roster. But some of the other clubs that were a bit more top-heavy, they created a lot of thunder and won the games in a different fashion.
Shai, we're going to let you run. Thank you for doing this, man.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Take care.
Shai Davidi, our MLB insider with Sportsnet. Again, 8 o'clock tonight will be the first pitch. Jays and Astros from Minute Maid Park. First of three games, then it's an off day, and then it's on to the Bronx, and then the Jays finally get home to open up the home portion of the schedule against the Seattle Mariners. So the Houston Astros, they opened their season with a four-game series against the New York Yankees. Didn't go the way they thought it would, I think is a pretty safe bet. The Astros swept at home by the Yankees. Jeff Blum is a Houston Astros TV analyst. Speaking of overreacting, we'll ask him, is there much of an overreaction in Houston after that four-game sweep? We'll find out next. Don't go anywhere. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Covering the Raptors in depth like no one else. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Enough of the abuse, Parker. Seriously, I've had enough.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm fine.
What are you going to do about
it? Wait till we're there. Yeah. 8 o'clock tonight will be the first pitch between the Jays and Houston Astros. The Jays coming off a split of a four-game series.
The Astros season over?
Well, let's ask our next guest, shall we? Jeff Blum is a Houston Astros TV analyst. Joins us in Blair and Barker. So that,
I had
so,
to ask.
So my preseason pick of the Braves over the Astros, I'm basically screwed.
Over.
All right, I'm screwed. Less than a week into the season. Nicely done, Jeff.
I was going to say, I always appreciate those quality lead-ins right there. It's great to be on with you guys. Such a positive environment. Yeah, hey, fire sale. You know, everybody's on the market. You know, shoot, no. Yeah, it's one thing to go out there and lose four games. It's another thing to do it to begin the season, and then you do it against the Yankees, and two of those games are broadcast nationally. I mean, it was like everything just continued to pile up against what the Astros were trying to do. But at the same time, I don't think that it's really time to hit the panic button yet, because the, you know, Juan Soto addition to the New York Yankees, I think, is going to prove its worth throughout the course of the year, not just because he's good, but he's also in a contract year, so he's going to be extra motivated. But, yeah, the Astros ran into a buzzsaw, maybe not as prepared as they had hoped to be.
I can't believe I'm going to ask this, but I'm going to anyway. What concerns you more, that the Astros only hit two home runs in four games, or the pen ERA in four games was almost seven?
I'm going to go with the bullpen just because, and it sounds crazy saying that, because the big news in the offseason was the Astros signing Josh Hader, you know, arguably the best, well, he probably was the best reliever on the market at the time. And from what I've seen in his three outings in those four games, he looked brilliant. I know he gave up the game-losing hit to Juan Soto, but at the same time, the stuff coming out of the hand looked fantastic. He didn't look like he was overwhelmed by situations. He looked like a guy that was going to fit right in and go out there and compete. So I think he's going to be fine. But that being said, and the reason why I picked the bullpen is because Ryan Pressly is going to be learning a new role. Now, you know, in the next couple of days against the Blue Jays, he may be used as a closer because, I just said, Hader had been used three out of 4 days. Just give him a night, a little bit of a breather. But it's getting from the starting rotation that's been reasonably good to start the season, and getting to that back end of the bullpen is where the issue is, because the Astros lost Ryan Stanek, Phil Maton, and Hector Neris. Those guys were all three very reliable, very successful, and very competitive pitchers who could get guys out on both sides of the plate. And you've replaced them with Taylor Scott, Seth Martinez, and Brandon Belak, Rafael Montero. So it wasn't really a lateral move. You didn't really replace those guys with the same quality. So I think that's where Joe Espada, the new manager of the Astros, is going to kind of have to, you know, do a good job of trying to find pockets to make those guys successful. But that's really been the biggest issue for me, is how are you going to get from the starting rotation to those big boys at the back end of the bullpen with a lead and maintain that lead?
Jeff, the Blue Jays are getting the Yankees in a couple of days. They're going to have to try and get Soto out. If you had to give any advice to the Jays pitching staff, what would it be against Soto?
I don't feel like we attacked him too much on the inside. I mean, you've got to be careful on the inside, obviously, because if it does leak out over the plate, he's going to put a good swing on it. But he's very discretionary on which pitches he goes after. So if you're able to attack those edges and really mix pitches and keep them off balance, and I would watch that Josh Hader at bat that he had last night. Even though he ended up winning the battle, I think that there was a sequence that Hader was trying to set up in that 2-2 count where he threw a fastball in and he missed in, unfortunately, that kind of gave way to the fact that Soto was going to move to the outside of the plate and go off the outside to get that base hit. But Hader did a good job showing the fastball, getting some foul balls, but eventually setting up the potential on a two-strike count to really bust him in with velocity. And I wish that pitch had been a little bit closer, because I don't think Soto would have swung. And if he did, he would have gotten blown up. But, you know, it's how do you keep that guy off balance? He's so on his legs. And like I said, he's always ready to hit. But if you can start picking those edges and force him to make some decisions as far as whether or not to swing, that's where I think you might be able to set him up for later in the count.
Yep.
Jeff, the Astros are 8-41 with runners in scoring position over those four games. So they did have their opportunities. Did you detect anything as to how the Yankees were pitching them that maybe was a little different than you expected?
You know what? That's a great question. You know, you watch these at-bats and you kind of, in the past, you've seen teams be very, very tentative. You know, I've got to grab an edge. I got to throw a slider here. I got to keep them off balance and get them to roll it over. But the aggressiveness, and it might have something to do with the personnel that was in the game in some of those moments too, but they were very aggressive with fastballs. And I think that kind of surprised the Astro hitters a little bit, because normally in the past when you know, I learned this from talking to Jesse Barfield. He said, when you're in those RBI situations, and he said the louder the crowd, the slower the pitch. And that's kind of been the mantra of these at-bats for the Astros with runners in scoring position in the past, is that when it's in these high leverage moments, usually they'd see some spin or a changeup and they'd get a mistake out over the plate and hammer it. But I think in this series that the Yankees had against the Astros, they were very aggressive with that fastball early on and were even more aggressive with it with two strikes. And I think that kind of surprised a little bit of those Astro hitters.
Jeff, not named the main guys in the lineup every day for the Astros. Is there a guy that not a ton of people talk about that's very important to the Astros this year?
It's easy to say Yordan Alvarez and Jose Altuve. Those guys are obviously, you know, you've got Altuve at the top who sets everything up and kind of is the he's the heart and the motor of that offense. And then you just have, you know, you've got that nitrous oxide in the middle of it with Yordan Alvarez. But I think Alex Bregman's going to play a key role. And surprising as it is, I don't feel like Kyle Tucker gets the recognition that maybe he deserves, because he led the American League in RBIs last year with 112. And then you say, well, he's in the Astros lineup. And I get that. But at the same time, he was one home run away from being a 30-30 guy. He's got a gold glove. He led the American League in RBIs for a season. So I think that he's really one of those guys that maybe is understated just because he goes out there and does it so consistently. But I think he's starting to get to that point in his career where he's done it for 2 or 3 years now, and people might start to recognize him a little bit more. But Kyle Tucker is one of those, I wouldn't say unsung heroes, but he's definitely one of those heroes that we don't talk about enough.
What can you tell us about tonight's starter, Ronel Blanco? I think this is his ninth career start, eighth career start maybe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know what's interesting about Ronel? I think he's 30 years old, but at the same time, if you go back the last couple of years and you look at what he's done in the Winter League, you know, the Latin American Caribbean Winter League, I don't think he gave up a run in the last two seasons. If you go to his spring training, I think he's given up 2 runs in 70 innings in the last two spring training. So he's got the stuff to make the club. I think he's trying to prove that he's got the stuff to stay in the big leagues and be a contributor. I think this spot in the rotation is perfect for him. It takes some of the pressure off him and just kind of says, look, if you can go out there and give us 5 strong, we will be perfectly happy with that. He's got a great fastball and in the mid-90s. Sometimes location can be a little bit of an issue, but if he's able to locate the fastball early in the count, he's able to get ahead and get to a slider that creates this great shape that really starts on the plate and kind of has a little bit more tilt to it than maybe your average slider and breaks down and away from right-handed hitters and creates a little bit of an issue. But I think that he's got to develop, you know, maybe a changeup or a curveball, and he's working on a changeup that he threw in spring training, this spring training, that looked a little more effective than ones we've seen in the past. So if he can get those 3 pitches, I think that's what's going to help him get through the lineup and, you know, more than once, maybe hopefully more than twice. But that's kind of what you get, fastball, slider, changeup. But that slider is definitely a put-away pitch if it's on.
Every time, Jeff, I turn on Instagram, I see Bregman taking some swing in a batting cage. It's always something right off a tee. He's doing some kind of flip. He's saying something to Instagram. I don't listen to the words a whole lot because I want to watch his mechanics. And, you know, he's got mm-hmm. a little different path, I think you could say, with the way he wants to get to the finish and what he's trying to do to baseballs. And then if I'm Bowden Francis, I'm thinking if there's one guy in the lineup other than the obvious names who are left-handed, you mentioned Tucker and Alvarez and Altuve, those are 3 big-time names. But you look at Bregman, right, a little short, compact swing who can hit an elevated fastball. Is there anything, and, you know, he's in his walk year, is there anything that you're seeing with his approach, his mechanics, that might be a little different, that could take him to a little bit of a next level?
Yeah, and I love that you watch those on Instagram too, because I do the same thing. You know, it's easy for us to do scouting and learn a little bit more just by watching social media. It's a whole different world, and it's crazy. But, you know, he's a real tinkerer with the swing. You know, he's never settling on one swing for a certain amount of time. Granted, if something, he'll just kind of perfect it and maintain it as long as he can. But he's not afraid to tweak things every now and then. And he's getting back, and I really appreciate this, because he's getting back to that 2019 mentality of kind of get on the dish a little bit, force the pitcher to, you know, try and bust him inside. Because like you said, Kevin, he can get to speed on the inside because he's got such a compact and direct swing to the baseball, so he doesn't panic on the inside. And when he's able to cover that inside, he can relax a little bit and cover the outside corner if he does get some of those filthy sliders like I know Francis can bring. And that's where it's going to be interesting to see if Francis is able to bust him in and set up that outside corner with that slider. I think it's going to be a fun matchup. But one thing that I'm watching Alex last year, he kept both hands on the bat. Mm-hmm. And I think he was trying to let the ball travel a little bit and not go reaching for the baseball. But something changed in spring training with a lot of those swing mechanics he adjusted is now he's starting to get to contact with both hands on the bat, but he's releasing through that baseball with the one hand and kind of getting a little more velocity behind the baseball, and he's been driving the ball a little bit better in spring. It hasn't translated into the regular season yet, but he's been a perennial slow starter. But once it gets going, you're going to start to see a little more of that 2019 Alex Bregman.
Jeff, what's more likely to happen? Kyle Tucker gets his extension or Alex Bregman gets a contract and avoids free agency? Or both? It's a great question.
Man.
Or neither.
I was going to say, you know, well, I don't think it's going to be neither. And, you know, it would be, you'd be hard-pressed to say it would be both, unfortunately. But I know that both of them, you know, just in my experience with them, myself, and then understanding Jim Crane, the owner of the Astros, and obviously the aggressiveness of the GM, Dana Brown, we want to keep this together as long as we possibly can. And guys who have played here over the last 6 or 7 years want to stay here. Mm-hmm. And they've talked to the Carlos Correas, they've talked to the George Springers, the Garrett Coles, you know, about taking the contracts and leaving. And so they have a lot of information in front of them. But these guys are very comfortable in this situation. This is obviously a great ballpark to hit in, so both of these guys would benefit from staying here in Houston. I think it's just ultimately because these guys are going to warrant such large contracts that it's ultimately going to come down to Dana Brown and Jim Crane saying, which tax threshold do we want to go over? Ultimately, because if you do keep them, you're going to be great. The fan base is going to love you, and these guys are going to play hard. But if you do lose them, it's going to be a purely financial decision. I don't think it's going to be a personnel or personal. I think it's just going to be a financial situation where somebody else beat the Astros to the contract.
Tucker would look really good in the Jays uni. I'm just telling that right now.
Like 30, holy moly! 30 teams,
you know what?
Wow.
Yeah, no, and I know you know this from just watching him from afar. He's one of those guys like it was like watching Michael Brantley in the Indians/Guardians uniform for a while, and then having him here in Houston, I was like, dear God, this swing is gorgeous.
Yeah,
and he's so much fun to watch. That's how Kyle Tucker would be. Like anybody who picks him up is going to be very pleased with that kind of player.
Yep.
Yeah, it's always, you know, it always amazed me when I was traveling on the beat. You go into Houston, and I don't know if people necessarily realize this, but this was even before the sort of the World Series years with Houston. You'd go into Houston, and Jeff, the Astros alumni, I mean, we're talking, there'd be 20, 25 guys out at a game. Larry mm-hmm. Durker, all these guys who settled in Houston and lived there. And, yeah, that's why I'd really like to see Alex Bregman get a deal done and just finish out his career there. I'm still a sucker for guys mm-hmm. that spend a whole career.
Well,
with the
his agent too has had a bad offseason, so we'll see how that affects anything he wants to try and do.
We've heard this that before. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I don't think Alex Bregman's giving anybody a discount because Scott Boras didn't get JD Martinez signed until a week ago.
Yeah,
I'm pretty certain about that.
Yeah.
Jeff, thanks for doing this, man. Always good to talk to you. Be well.
Thank you.
No, appreciate it. Good seeing you guys, and hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Take care. Jeff Blum, Astros analyst. So interesting, Ronel Blanco. You know who he sounds like? Sounds a lot like Bowden Francis. Had a great spring. 30-year-old guy. Had a great spring. At one point, he had 15 2/3 scoreless innings. Earned a spot in the team. A guy who's been in the organization for a long time, a guy who's looking to stay, looking to stick. Boy, it sounds a lot like we got two guys today who are pitching. You know, they've been given votes of confidence, and now it's up to them to run with it.
Well, it'd be interesting to see how the Jays lineup, especially the first four guys who are all right-handed, handle, you know, the Blanco and the abusing of the slider. He loves the slider. I mean, he's a reverse
slider.
He does. Yeah, he'll throw more sliders. He throws four-seamers. So it's almost like he's using a slider to set up a four-seamer. It'd be interesting to see if the Jays, because of the short porch and left, can use the same approach. That ball's going down and away from you. I can't do damage on that, right? Right field, right center. I mean, it's a little shorter there. The ball does carry
a little bit
in Houston there. It's not the easiest thing to do. I mean, those fences look like they're right on top of you. I've been in Houston before as a player. They feel like they're right on top of you. They're like they're right behind second base. So it's very hard to stay within a sound approach and not chase and get, you know, frisky, sort of that party out front kind of thing. It'll be interesting to see how many times they chase that slider. If they don't, they'll have a good chance. If they do, you know, it might be another one of those 9-2 games. I mean, Bowden Francis, I think, is going to be good because of the spin on the four-seamer. And he's working on a split finger. Yeah, he probably won't throw that a ton. It'll be more of the curveball, the slider, and the four-seamer, and he likes the four-seamer. The four-seamer up's good because he's giant. And most hitters have to, you know, sort of direct their eyes a little taller. And then because of that four-seamer has so much spin to it, it gives the illusion that that thing's going up. And then you tend to swing and miss on it, and it's very hard to tell, is that a strike or a ball?
Yeah,
and that's why he gets chases on that. So hopefully he's good. It's a good game. And
I'm looking forward to seeing him. Me too.
He's worked hard. And he is a good dude. I talked to him in spring training. I mean, he always comes over and says hi to me, gives me knuckles. Like, he is a good, really good guy. He's always got his kid with him, which is kind of nice, right? His kid's always following him around. So it's just, it's nice. He's impossible not to root for. Yeah. So I'm rooting for him, and I hope he does a really good job.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm excited to see what this game holds for
and
him.
And I know Pete Walker loves him. Yeah, he loves him. Loves him.
It's safe to say the organization really likes
him. It's just okay, too, if you're watching the game tonight, look at sort of when it gets to a certain part of the game. Like, it's either pitches
or inning or part in the game. The magic number, 55 to 60?
No, it's been more in that 65 to 70 range, I think, where just the stuff starts to go backwards.
So if it's in the third inning and you're at 60 pitches,
yeah, hopefully that's not the case, right? He's filling up the strike zone, getting some quick outs. You know, the Astros looking for a win. They're probably going to be real aggressive around the zone. You know, he can get some quick outs if the quality of the pitch is there. So be quality with that. Don't hang the split finger if you're going to throw it. Don't hang the curveball if you're going to throw it. When you throw the slider to righties, make sure the miss with it's very good. And attack the zone with the four-seamer. And do it with some vinegar. I think that's what they love about him. He's got really good stuff, and he's got a little attitude, which is sort of what you need at the back of a rotation.
He knows he's a big dude.
I think he knows more. He's got good stuff. I mean, he's the pitcher's telling you that he's got good stuff. When they swing and miss on a ball that they should be hammering, and it's like, well, maybe I can continue to throw it there. Fill it up. Don't beat yourself, because you can get beat there by just, you know, sort of losing mechanics and overthrowing early in the game. Because you walk a guy, because sometimes they get cheap home runs with that Crawford box in left field. So just stay within yourself. Don't walk a guy. Attack the zone with that fastball. You'd be fine. He's a good pitcher. He'd be all right.
What did you make about what Jeff told us about Alex Bregman and his approach and being a little more on the plate?
It's always seemed like he's that way. I mean, he doesn't have he's not a tremendous power guy. He's a, you know, squared up middle of field line drive guy, think right center. You know, and because of where he's standing, a little short arms, you know, just point of contact, he can pull the ball because of the park he plays in 81 times a year. He's a good hitter. Like, you got to make good pitches to him. And again, he's got a little Danny Jansen in him, right? You got to crowd him. You know, plate awareness for dudes that want to pull the ball and have the bat path that he does, you got to crowd him. You got to pull him. And Bowden can't be afraid to get it in there, right? And if he moves his feet, he moves his speed. That's sort of what it is, right? Go up and in with the fastball. Be good with your location and quadrant there, and then that will open up the slider down and away. And then if you wanted to throw a split finger or a little slow breaking ball to steal a strike with him, you can do that. You got to pitch to him. You got to throw to him. You got to have both. This is one of those teams where you have to pitch and throw to a bunch of guys in this lineup to get them out. And this is a nice little test for Bowden.
The pitching matchups for the rest of the series, game two will be Jose Berrios against Framber Valdez, and game three, Chris Bassett against Christian Javier, who had a really – he pitched well in his first start of the
season.
Big
good series.
Didn't get the result, but he pitched well. And, I wouldn't read a great deal into those four games against the Yankees doing some research on it. They hit some balls really hard.
If the Yankees
played some defense.
Yeah. If the Rays swept the Jays, how do you think Jays fans would be right now?
Yeah.
The Astros fans would be the same way. They're the same way. You want to see that team win.
The Astros fans, they got some rings. They got some rings.
It's what have you done for me lately? Just got swept by the Yankees.
8 o'clock will be the first pitch tonight. A reminder, Blair and Barker will be along after the game for Blue Jays Talk, and we will be back here tomorrow, as per usual, 2 to 4 Eastern. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy the baseball.